right? Let's talk about this. So you have a, let's talk about Utah. You have a state that is requiring every campus to now have this one manufacturing brand of gun detection, which, listen, that's a very good system. Yeah. I'll give them props. Sure. They do a very good job.
Sure.
And I would say that I don't dislike it, but what I would tell you is that that should not take precedent over a strong mental health plan. That should not take precedent over a solid behavioral threat assessment plan. That should not take precedent over having an individual campus data analyst that runs through this data to identify these patterns of behavior in these kids. It should not take precedent over not having an emergency action plan for every single campus, not an all-encompassing EOP, because there is a difference. What I'm saying is there's probably a list this long of things that I would do before that.
Yeah, it's similar to what we've talked about on some of the gunshot detection stuff. Like we've been in a school that's considering spending a tremendous amount of money on a gunshot detection system, and they've got 16 cameras on the entire campus. They have doors that physically don't close.
Yeah.
And they're going to go spend all of this money on a gunshot detection system.
Yeah.
So it's not that gunshot detection systems aren't effective or efficient in some way. It's that you have to look at the entire vulnerability of the entire facility, and you have to prioritize that, because there is a limited amount of money and you have to go back in and say, okay, let's get the doors to actually close and lock. Let's start there. Or you'll go into a school of, let's say, 7,000 kids, and there's 8 tourniquets in the stop the bleed kit for the entire school, or one AED, right? With all of the stuff that's happened with COVID and even stuff that we've seen, that how many gyms have we been into that it's regulated to have zero AEDs?
Nothing.
Right? And we hear about time and time again about a kid playing basketball or playing football and drops dead on the field. And we have no medical aids for those kids. There's so many other things that you have to look at. And what's crazy about it is they can mandate that, but they can't mandate this. They can mandate that you have to use this technology, but they won't mandate to hold architects accountable to stop making schools glass boxes and actually building some material that could
help. That's because there's no standard. There's no standard across the board. And I know that there are some people and there's some announcements that are going to be coming out where there will be a board that's going to be put together. I will be on that board of at the highest level, be working on creating a standard throughout the United States. I put out a poll on LinkedIn yesterday. I had, as of this morning, I had 51 people that participated in the poll, and it was, do you think that there should be a national K-12 security standard, kind of like the CFR, right?
Right.
It was developed in 2002, passed 2004. It basically says, across the board, you have to have these minimum standards, right? Across all 50 states, literally, in the state of Texas or in the United States, you can go district to district and have completely different.
You can go school to school in the same district.
Right. And so we will be working to create that standard. Will it get to where it needs to be? I don't know. But I can tell you this, the people that are on that board are professionals.
Yeah.
And I think that we can do that, but it has to be done. I mean, let's even go even deeper, right? Let's talk about those that are qualified to even be able to plan, organize, and execute these particular types of events at a K-12 campus or at a university campus. I mean, hell, let's talk about Uvalde, and I have no problem saying this guy's name, and I don't care. Pete Arredondo, chief of Uvalde CISD. Perfect example of someone not qualified. But what happened? You have an uninformed school board and superintendent that say, hey, Pete Arredondo was a police officer in X, Y, and Z. Hey, he's qualified to do security. Let's take Pete and let's put him over here in charge of our 6,000 kids and however many campuses.
We've seen other...
And you saw the complete shit show.
Yeah, we've seen other ones where promotion within, right? So you take an officer who may have had very limited outside exposure, goes to get the school job and is there and becomes chief just because he's been there a long time, right?
Let's go even further. and this may offend some of even our clients, but let's talk about this, right? And this is not meant to be offensive, but it's the truth. Just deal with it. It is what it is. This is why I'm saying this is what separates me from a lot of other people. A lot of other people wouldn't talk like this. You're talking about a law enforcement officer that's been in schools that's promoted to chief. I'm talking about a teacher who was a principal, who became an administrator, who's now the executive director or the director of security for a school district.
Well,
they understand the K-12 space. I'll give them that.
We've had things where, you know, somebody comes in and starts off as a, you know, let's say running us in a very small district, runs security, cameras, access control. And we've seen them move from that role into executive director of safety and security for the school district of a much larger school.
Yeah.
Right. And the complexity is exponential.
Yeah.
Right. You go from a very, very small rural district, you go into a much bigger one, even let's say if it's rural, but it's a much larger district. And then all of a sudden now they were looking at cameras and maybe access control. And then now everything's falling under them.
Yeah.
Radio communications, behavioral health, emergency planning, incident command, mass communication, video access, film, the entire behavioral threat training and management of their team,
yeah,
reporting to the executive cabinet, all of these things, where did they suddenly get
yeah.
the experience or the skills to do that, where there was no additional training yeah. for that person?
We have clients. I mean, you and I both have clients that, and I feel bad for some of these individuals that they've just been heaped, you know, all this responsibility on top of their head and they haven't been prepared.
Well, I think what's scary is that you take something like a Uvalde, you take something like a Santa Fe, you take a whatever, they're looking to hang that on somebody, right? Mm-hmm. Whatever happened there. Where in the school did this come back to? What, you know, where?
Oh, that was the executive director of security.
You're like literally playing yeah. hot potato going, well, yeah. this didn't fall under me. You know, I'm superintendent. I hired somebody to do that.
Yeah.
Here you go, pass the potato, right? Yeah. And it's this, you just want to be the last one not carrying a potato.
And then that superintendent and that school board have failed to prepare that individual, you know.
And unfortunately, I don't think that there's a whole lot of really good training and resources.
I agree with that. To prepare them.
All of the things that they are putting under those departments,
which
right?
is why I say that you have to have had some experience in this space.
And how many schools have we seen where all of that lays on one person's back?
Guy or girl, because we know some ladies that
but
do
like,
a good job.
I mean,
too,
it's one person, and you see them, and if they're really doing it, I mean, look, I remember you when that was hanging over your
rough.
Head, right?
Yeah, I mean, and I would be the first one to tell you, I didn't have it all figured out, right?
Yeah, but you, even then.
I did the best that I could.
You ran ragged.
Oh, man,
bro.
It was wore
I
out.
Mean, I remember stories and seeing and being involved in things where you just didn't sleep.
No,
you were up all night. You were dealing with trying to get resources in and people to get kids taken care of that you knew were going through some challenging. And then you would have events the next morning in the school, and it just never stopped. And it wasn't just Monday through Friday either.
No, it was weekends, holidays, you name it.
Your phone rang all
nonstop
the time.
Nonstop,
right? And it was never. I mean, how many meetings did you and I have? I was a vendor, I come back in, you're in that position.
Hey, I gotta go.
And you literally goes off, and everybody in the room that we're having a meeting with is like, I'm out. And it's like, okay, well, I guess that this is over, right?
Well, it's different too. And I think that, you know, speaking from experience, you know, I'll be the first one to tell you, if people think that, I mean, coming from my background with the Secret Service, very preventative, very proactive, I truly feel like guys like me are best positioned for these particular types of jobs because we've worked in that preventative field for a very long time. But even I will tell you that when I got there, K-12 whooped my tail. I mean, I come from an environment where it was like you ask someone to do something or you give them essentially a directive.
And they go and do it. And they know how to do it.
K-12 is not that way.
Right.
We are not dealing with the same people. Now, we're dealing with some very intelligent and very much needed people. Listen, you can never replace a teacher. They mold America. or even administrators, but you're dealing with a different animal, man. And I love watching. I know of a guy right now that retired recently from the Secret Service, and he thinks he's got it all figured out. And it's like, dude, I've been there. I've done that.
Just wait.
You're going to learn. And you don't want to listen to me, but you're going to get eaten up.
Yeah.
You're going to get completely eaten up. And it's like, okay, well, you don't want to listen. I tried to tell you, but it's okay. It is what it is. You know, you'll learn. But,
well, you know, I think that this is a perfect segue here. Definitely we have a lot more to talk about.
Oh, but, yeah.
You know, I think there's, as we talk about, I think all things in life, there's got to be a middle ground, right? I mean, everything in America is so decisive. There's the pendulum swing on either end. And I think Mesquite was a perfect example of that, where, you know, we had Uvalde on the side and we had, you know, the Mesquite deal on the other side. We've got to find some middle ground, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that it can be, and, you know, an ounce of prevention is worth
a pound of flesh. Right? Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, this whole Mesquite thing. I mean, you know, listen, people are probably going to watch this and go, man, he's Monday morning quarterback. And yeah, I mean, essentially, yes, but that's what we're supposed to do, is let's break this down. Let's figure out how we can.
It's talking about, in general, what else can be done, right?
Well, I just think that different tactics could have been done. I mean, it was typical police tactics. It's not the same. It's like I was on LinkedIn. I talked about that after the report came out that 19 shots were fired, nobody was hit. You know, my questions were, how many other people were put in harm's way by their actions?
Right.
You know,
yeah.
What type of traumatizing effect did that have on the campus?
Yep.
Could that distance have been closed from the breach of the door to the couch where the gun was on the ground? And if they had done that, would he even have reached for the gun? Because I truly believe that kid didn't want to hurt anybody that day. Because if he did, he wouldn't have gone to the office.
Yeah.
Or he wouldn't have sought that assistance. He would have just walked in like the Santa Fe shooter and just started killing people.
Right.
Right?
For sure.
But we can break that down another day, right? The whole Santa Fe deal. But I just feel it could have been handled differently. That's one person's perspective. But the bigger point I want to make is that K-12 is different. You have to treat it different. It's not a law enforcement environment. It was never designed to be a law enforcement environment. And it's, like I said, the perfect example of what I'm trying to articulate is that until the cops got there, that administrator had that kid under control.
Correct.
What dynamic shift happened?
Well, and there's obviously a level of trust and respect and everything else that had already been established.
Yeah.
But again, prevention.
Yeah.
Let's get to that point. Let's don't even let it get to this level. That's really what this is about. That's really what our passion's about.
Yeah.
That's really what we're trying to change, is so that we don't have another Mesquite, not because of the training of the officers or the situation. Let's just not get kids to that level. Right.
Well, like I said, I mean, they got there quick. They got on it. They did what they were trained to do. I have no criticism of that.
Sure.
What happened in the in-between is where I think maybe we need to have further conversations. I would love to have a couple of those guys on. I know they probably wouldn't, but I'd love to have them on, just be like, hey, what led you?
I'd love to find out more about what's going on with the kid.
Yeah. You know, what led you to decide to not close that gap? And being former law enforcement, what I believe that it truly was is that in law enforcement training, yes, there's a certain level of vocal de-escalation, but officers see that gun and they become polarized by it. It's like, dude, just close the gap, man. Like, and I know some people will say, well, listen, we want to let that person make that decision on how they get handled, right? Like, it's going to be up to them to decide. I disagree. In some cases, yes, right? But in this particular case, violence of action, or even just an assertive movement towards him, I think that kid would have surrendered. I really think he would have surrendered. But like you, I'm like you. I want to know what was going on in that kid's head. Yeah. Because that's really the key, too, is what was going on with that kid at the time.
Who knew? right?
And who knew about it?
Yeah, who knew about it?
Well, we know. I mean, look at the 2008 bystander study from the Secret Service and the National Threat Assessment Center. You know, over 80-something percent of the cases from 99, which was Columbine, to 2008, there was always at least two people who knew, right?
Yep.
That number has now increased.
Yep.
Over 90% of the cases, someone knows about it.
Yeah,
right?
And the reality is everything's more social and mobile and texting and group chats. And, and the kids are just more and more social and makes more and more people aware of what's going on with somebody, right? Yeah. So we could talk about this all day.
Yeah, we could.
More to come, right? We're
going
to keep pumping these out and getting more content out.
What are going to be some of the next ones we're going to talk about?
We have, that's actually probably the hardest thing is... What do we talk about next?
Yeah.
There has been so much going on, from legislation to, you know, technology to actual events. I would say we have a wealth of things to talk about.
Yeah.
It's just getting the timing. And
I think we're going to talk about Santa Fe some more because I'm passionate about it.
Yeah.
I think we're going to talk about, now that we're no longer the Secure Ed podcast, we feel that we can provide, not only amongst the two of us, but also within our network, a group of professionals throughout the nation and in the industry that talks about security as a whole. And
right.
So we've changed the name from Secure Ed to Secured.
It was always Secure.
Well, it was always Secured, but there was an emphasis on education because we're just passionate about it.
But I think we're still educating people, right? It's just not specific to the education space.
True.
Right? I think that, you know, I think the reason why we've been successful at what we do is about finding that middle of the road, being able to sniff out things and being able to like, yeah, this doesn't work.
Well, and talk about the things that no one wants to talk about. I think that's the difference, right?
And, you know, sometimes, you know, people come out with products or solutions or methodology that just need to be called out, right? That they don't work.
The one that I got in my inbox this week, I want to say the name so bad, but I'm not going to do that, right?
It's not worth it. No.
But what I would tell you, listen to me, if you're a director of security,
corporate security director,
K-12 university,
sure,
you have us, you have my team, which we collectively have 30 consultants in 15 states now. Mike's team, who is one of the largest privately held security companies in the state of Texas. Before you buy something, call us. We will provide some assistance and guidance to you
for sure.
That will make sense and will give you reasons why you should, or maybe you shouldn't, or maybe, yeah, that's a good idea, but let's think about this before you do that, right? So that would be our plea to you, is this: don't just go hastily buying something because you see everybody else doing it.
Well, and I mean, you see the projects that we have done where we've been able to sit down with a team of a corporate security, and maybe it's a board, maybe it's a dedicated security team, and actually systematically walk through, you know, the holes in their security fabric, right, as a whole, as a company, and then put together a plan, mm-hmm. and then execute, and how we've been able to change the culture and climate, and how much more difficult those facilities are, how much more aware everybody in the organization is of what's going on,
mm-hmm.
how they have more data at their fingertips, getting rid of pen and paper, putting everything in there, being able to make systems work together. And when you see that all happen, how much different the security posture is.
Yeah, it's just it's so much more effective.
And you know, when you start talking about, you know, a lot of these corporate facilities, and you put a dollar sign next to that facility, whether that's a manufacturing facility, whether that's a corporate office, whether that's a refinery, critical infrastructure, you know, any of those types of things, if that facility goes down, or if there was an event to happen in this corporate office, what is the business interruption? What's the dollars associated with that? And when you start having those kinds of conversations, that they're meaningful, they're impactful, and you can get people on board to really start working on a systematic approach of how to fix things and go, we're going to tackle this first here, and here's why. And working as a team, you know, we've done that quite a bit, and it's a lot of fun.
The hardest thing for me is this, that individuals that recognize that they're not qualified to make the decisions, they hire us, and then they want to be adversarial when we give them you know, we give them advice and then they're like, oh, I don't like that.
News is hard to swallow sometimes.
It's like, well, right? I know you don't like it, but this is the reality, right?
Yeah, you know? But when you're taking pictures of, you know, sitting in the CEO's office or, you know, in the main server room or...
You're eating lunch with their employees for 3 hours and you're...
Whatever, right? I mean, there's a lot of different things or, you know, you go...
Those are all real scenarios.
Or you go through, you know, some high security, you know, facility and you're next to, you know, a tank of some really nasty chemical and you're sitting there taking selfies and that goes into a report and it's like, how did you get in here? Well, these are the things that we need to fix, right? Mm-hmm. And so... Our, you know, when we work with organizations, many times they have an implied sense of security that they feel is like a 8 out of 10.
It's really about a 2,
right? And so then when they actually get that, it opens up a lot of eyes.
Yeah.
And so it's either well received with open arms, and we found, and we can make great strides, and things can be changed, or they go through a rough patch and sometimes they come back and things happen, but you know, maybe that's a changing of the guard or something happens, but I think it's, you know, exciting what we do, and you know, this podcast, these other companies, the other products that we're developing and building, the boards that you're on, that's about changing the status quo as a whole, right? Making a difference. So you know, I hope to be holding or having podcasts and talking about data of prevented situations.
Sure would be nice, wouldn't it?
Yes.
You know, that's something that's not measured.
It isn't.
Very often.
Right.
You know, when I was at Texas City ISD, I can recall close to a dozen suicide saves.
Yeah.
You know, and I think here's the other thing. This is a direct plea to anybody who's in this space. You can't just be the executive director of security for your school district, you know, between 7:30 and 3:30. You have to be 24/7.
Yes.
And I think that was, honestly, I think that was hard for a lot of people to swallow, because that's who I am.
Well, and if you don't, we also have to have a quality of life, which comes back to, you have to have the staff to where you can,
right,
you can operate, because so much intel is collected after 9 p.m.
Yeah, sure.
Right.
I mean, I can recall being out 12, 1, 2, 4 a.m. looking for kids. You know why? Because the police, you know, we had a couple kids that were runaways. Some that got caught up literally in sex trafficking. We found them.
Right.
You know, with my investigative skill that I learned from the service and the network that I had, we found them.
Right.
Parents had gone to local law enforcement, like, oh, they hadn't been gone for long enough. You know, they're not necessarily a run, or they're not a, you know, they're not an imminent danger. They're just a runaway. Right. They may be a runaway, but
today,
what we're telling you is that we know the people that they're associated with, and these are people that are associated with this criminal element. And what my predictions were in this one particular case, it was an actual sex trafficking ring.
Sure.
And the 13-year-old child got caught up in a sex trafficking ring. And let me tell you how disgusting these people were. These individuals took this mother's credit card and they utilized her credit card to book the room that they used to sexually assault her child.
Yep.
I found them based upon the mother's credit card information. The police did not get involved until we had located them.
Yep.
Why did it take an executive director of security for a school to do that? You know, we've got to get better. This is not a... eight-hour job. This
is not even a K-12 issue. You really get back. This is a law enforcement issue, right?
It was a law enforcement issue.
Yeah.
But the thing is that there's policies and procedures. It takes that fortitude. It takes someone willing to put in that work, like I was back then. And this child's father was a staunch enemy of mine.
Yeah.
And I showed him where my heart was, and we're friends to this day. Because he realized, like, okay, this guy, okay, he's a real deal. Like, he really cares.
Right.
You know? But that's what I'm saying. It can't be, hey, I'm just on from 7:30 to 5. You have to, like Mike said, find that work-life balance. But you have to be willing to go out at 1, 2 o'clock in the morning when a kid's got a cry out for help through your anonymous reporting tool. Show up. Don't just call the police and let the police handle it. Show up, let them know that someone cares, because what you've done is you've now created an advocate for that kid to see at school.
It's about building a team, because unfortunately, so many times we saw over and over and over and over again that it doesn't matter how big the district is, this is often on one person's shoulders.
I agree.
And that is unacceptable.
We were an anomaly.
You were, but think about how hard you had to fight to get an additional position.
Yeah, the one that I fought for that I just could not, the board could not wrap their brain around, was a behavioral threat management analyst. Someone that could work on my team that could just, all they were doing was breaking down behaviors so that we could identify kids in crisis. Because I did not have the bandwidth or capacity to do it. I was doing everything that I could with the great team that I had. We had a fantastic team.
You did, but you had to fight for those positions.
We did.
Right? And so, unfortunately, there's so many organizations that we've gone into that it all rests on one person's shoulders.
Well, and now that I'm gone...
And it's not realistic.
Well, now that I'm gone, that district is pretty much completely diluted my whole division.
Oh, they shut it down. You know,
They pretty much shut it down. Yeah, and it's because they don't understand, and it's because certain individuals at that district think that their PhD, compensates for the lack of experience that I have. And you know what? It's that, get out of your head. If you're a superintendent, if you're in the K-12 space and you've never done what I've done, I would never tell you how to teach a kid, how to educate an entire district. Don't tell me how to protect people. And so if you want to get a good relationship built with your safety and security director, get out of their way. Absolutely get out of their way. Let them do their job within reason, obviously, but let them do their job. You hire them to be a professional, just like you hire a special education specialist.
Right.
You hire a curriculum specialist. This person is a specialist. Superintendents, you are not. I'm sorry, but you are not. Let them do their job.